It's time for Rose Chat on Blog Talk Radio. We're the only show on the airwaves dedicated to growing roses. We're glad you've joined us today. Our phone lines are open, and we'd love to hear from you during today's show. The number to call is 347-677-1870, or send us a tweet using the Rose Chat hashtag on Twitter. Join us as we explore the world of roses.
Well, I'm Chris Van Cleve, your host for Rose Chat, and I'm so glad you joined us today. We've got a great guest coming up. Now, if you love old garden and antique variety roses, you're in for a treat. Dr. Tony Liberta will be with us shortly to talk about these beautiful varieties of roses. Teresa, are you with us this morning?
Good morning, everyone. You know, old garden roses and antique roses are some of my very favorites. I have several in my garden. I've got rugoses, the Gallica Rosamunde, and I have one of my favorites, Madame Hardy. It's a perfectly formed white damask rose. And I am getting excited to see them bloom, but it's going to be a while. I probably have a few more weeks to wait. But, Chris, aren't you already seeing blooms in your garden?
Oh, we are. We are. This week, our Rins de Violette, which is an old Victorian-era hybrid perpetual, is blooming, as well as our swamp rose that we've had it for years, and it's just a huge shrub, and it's budding up very nicely. And we're also seeing a huge flush of blooms on our shrub of Old Blush. You know, that's a rose that's been around since, I believe, before in 1700s. It's a beautiful, fragrant pink bloom. You just got to see it.
I love those roses. I've been enjoying seeing your pictures. That's one of the wonderful things about social media. We get to enjoy them even before we have them.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's great. I want to encourage our listeners to go out to our Facebook page at facebook.com/rosechatradio and post a picture of your blooms. We'd love to see what's blooming in your garden. Or go out to Twitter and add photos of your garden and your blooms and just use the Rose Chat hashtag. You'll be sharing them with an audience of about 40 or 50,000 people who regularly follow that hashtag on social media. Susan Fox is joining us now. Good morning, Susan.
Hi, Chris. Hi, Teresa. How are you this morning?
Good morning.
Hey, we're doing great.
Great. You know, Chris and Teresa, our guest today is an expert on old garden and antique roses, and it's Dr. Tony Liberta, and he's an avid rose grower, and he's currently a member of the Greater Peoria and Decatur Rose Societies in Illinois. And as a member of the American Rose Society, he served on the board of directors for 6 years, as a director of the Illinois-Indiana District, as well as serving in a three-year term as a trustee for the American Rose Society Maintenance Endowment Trust. And during that time, he also served on several committees of the American Rose Society, and he chaired as the Rose Classification Committee for 13 years. Tony also frequently lectures and he writes articles on various aspects of rose culture and was a contributing author, along with his wife, to the books The Ultimate Rose and The Rose. Tony's an accredited judge. He was designated a Master Rosarian by the American Rose Society in 2005. Tony received the American Rose Society's President's Citation for his role in modernizing the society's system of classifying roses, and his other American Rose Society awards include the Bronze Honor Medal, which he shares with his wife, for dedicated service to the McLean County Rose Society, the American Rose Society Silk Honor Medal for service to the Illinois-Indiana District in 1988, and the Outstanding Consulting Rosarian Award in 2001. And, Tony, that list just goes on, and we are so proud to welcome you to Rose Chat. So I'm sure Chris and Teresa were thrilled to have Dr. Tony Liberta with us. And I also wanted you all to know that I met Tony when he did a wonderful presentation for us at the Stephen F. Decatur Rose Society meeting in Decatur, Illinois. So, Tony, can you tell us how you started? I know you're a retired professor from the State of Illinois University at Bloomington Normal, but how did you get started growing roses? We all love to hear these stories about what started us down this path.
Well, glad to share that. Actually, my interest in growing roses started quite by accident. Back in 1963, 50 years ago, my wife and I were returning to Illinois from a conference that I was attending in Massachusetts. And around lunchtime, it happened to be that we arrived in Valparaiso, Indiana, and saw a restaurant which specialized in preparing meals with turkey. So we stopped there, and when we got into the restaurant, we suddenly realized that except for the parking lot, the restaurant was plopped right in the middle of a huge rose garden, which was absolutely beautiful and filled with colors that I hadn't even realized were available in roses. So when I got back home, I thought, well, you know, maybe I can possibly grow some of these. And so I started growing a few hybrid teas. As a matter of fact, my first hybrid teas came from Ward's, Montgomery Ward's, which no longer exists, because we used to have a garden catalog.
Mm-hmm.
And I started out with 6 rose bushes, and then those kept growing to more and more. And in the early years, my rose growing, as with most rose growers, I became interested in exhibiting roses. So most of my roses were hybrid teas. But then in about the mid-1970s, I again met someone who I had never met before, whose enthusiasm and expertise on old garden roses just absolutely blew me away. And those in the American Rose Society who are, I will say, senior citizens or long-time members of the American Rose Society remember a gentleman by the name of Floyd Johnson, who was known by his friends as Stretch Johnson. And Stretch and I shared the teaching at a school to prepare apprentice horticulture judges, and his presentation about old garden roses and his enthusiasm about old garden roses simply meant that I just had to start growing them. So with his mentoring in terms of what old garden roses would do well, since he was from Wisconsin, he was familiar with the old garden roses who could withstand some of our winter weather, I began a small collection of old garden roses, which again continued to grow. And I probably have about 40 old garden roses in my yard at the current time. My yard is not terribly large, so I'm limited into the number of any kind of roses that I grow. So that's how I got started, and I just have come to love them a great deal. And the ones that I grow, I love even more because they are very hardy in Illinois and require minimal care. So that's how things got started a long time ago.
Well, Tony, you mentioned in your presentation, I thought it was just great, that some people, or the classification is old garden roses or antique roses, and you had a kind of a funny little reference to that. Can you give us the difference, by definition, what an old garden rose is versus an antique rose according to the ARS?
Well, okay. These roses are often referred to by a number of different names. Some will call them antique roses. Some will call them heritage roses. Some will call them heirloom roses. And the American Rose Society decided on calling them old garden roses. And I made the comment, I don't know if they mean that the gardens are old or the roses are old, but that's the terminology that the American Rose Society uses. And as a judge for roses, I often will use that designation. But the American Rose decided to make a distinction between old garden roses and modern roses. And as most vegetarians know, they decided that the date when the Rose La France was introduced as the supposedly first hybrid tea in 1867, that would be the cutoff point between old garden roses and modern roses. So any rose class that was in existence prior to 1867 would be designated an old garden rose. And, of course, species roses will always be prior to 1867. And any rose introduced into commerce at 1867 or later would be considered to be modern roses. So that's how the terminology OGR sort of came into being by the American Rose Society.
So technically, then, if I understand correctly, an old garden rose, antique rose, or heirloom, they're technically the same thing, though, right? But the classification is OGR. If so, if you're showing that classification of any of those, if you had them in your garden and you bought it and you thought it was antique or heirloom and you were going to show it, it would be in the classification of OGR, correct?
You're right. Family?
Okay.
That's right. And those that are designated as OGRs by the American Rose Society are eligible for particular awards at a rose show, and those that are not, obviously, are not eligible for those awards called the Dowager Queen.
Okay. All right. So they're not eligible? I'm sorry, I didn't
follow that. If a rose is designated as an old garden rose, it is eligible to compete for an award known as the Dowager Queen Award at any ARS-sanctioned rose show. So that's basically the method by which the American Rose Society will keep ineligible roses competing for the Dowager Award. Because
okay.
if they're not old garden roses, they can't compete for it.
I see. Okay. You know, you talked about in your presentation, I thought it was so fascinating how you talked about the evolution of roses from millions of years ago and the role that they played in culture, even in the Roman Empire. And I'm sure we could talk about that for hours, but could you just touch on a few highlights about how old garden roses, some of the roles they played over the course of history? Because I know you did touch on a few highlights about that.
Sure. There's historical evidence, for example, that in the Middle East and, for example, in Egypt, roses were a part of the culture, especially for the aristocrats. And there's evidence that roses from Egypt were imported into Italy during the time of the Roman Empire. And these roses, again, were appreciated primarily by people of means. And in continental Europe, there were many old roses, especially species roses, that were once bloomers but were, again, appreciated for their beauty. And probably these species roses, which were basically wild roses, were probably not only appreciated by aristocrats but also more or less the common folks who might have some garden space or yard space where they could grow them. And Renaissance painters would often include roses in their background paintings. For example, anyone familiar with Botticelli's The Birth of Venus will find roses in the background of that painting. And the Romans, again, sometimes you hear the term sub rosa, which means something that is said in confidence and that apparently maybe somewhat mythologically refers to the fact that anything said under a rose that was hanging over a lounge during the Roman times was to be kept in confidence and kept secret. So roses have sort of interspersed their way in cultures dating back even before the birth of Christ.
Well, I know also that you had mentioned that roses, I thought it was fascinating that you were talking about that the original low-maintenance or easy-care roses were of the old garden variety. Can you talk about that a little bit, how that they've survived for millions and millions of years? And as a biology professor, I'm sure that you, where was the evidence? Is it in fossils, or how do we know that roses were around 30 and 40 million years ago?
Well, it is primarily fossil evidence, which fossils which date back to all of those millennia. Many of those species roses are probably still surviving today, or at least the progeny of them. So we know that they are at least that old from the fossil evidence. We also know that roses originated in the northern hemisphere, and although they now grow in the southern hemisphere, it's because they've been imported, not because they evolved down there. And that's probably due to the fact that the seeds of roses need to go through a winter dormancy. And, of course, as roses would try to move across the equator to South America, they probably were as you might say, stymied. They simply couldn't make it. So roses are basically a northern hemisphere phenomenon, and from those ancient species roses, which were then used by breeders to start their breeding program, we have gotten all of the roses that we enjoy today. So growing species roses or growing old garden roses is like growing a piece of history. Some of you may know Claire Martin, who has written a book, which is a very good book, on 100 old garden roses for the American gardens. And he once made a statement to the effect that the old garden roses basically have the patina of history on them. And I thought that was an interesting way to say it, because those folks who, for example, watch Antique Roadshow hear about patinas on metal statues and so forth, which indicates age and desirability. And that's sort of the same thing that applies to old garden roses. You're growing a piece of history.
Yeah, I know you had mentioned that some of the colors that were in some of the old garden roses, that you referenced that to colors and paintings, like the damask rose that you would see in the Roman paintings. Isn't that true, that the colorations that you had seen were referenced from the pulling it from the color of roses, some of the old roses?
Right. In the Renaissance paintings and so forth, many of the roses that you would see depicted would be white or very light pink, because those were basically the roses that were either imported or available to the artists at that point in time. There's some evidence, for example, that the Romans grew roses in glass houses, or what we would call greenhouses, and forced once-blooming roses to bloom more than once, because they were much enamored with roses and rose petals. As I said, the forcing of roses to bloom more than once is a good indication of how much they love the roses. As far as Europe, and for example, the British Isles, many of the early roses that were being hybridized were often dark reds or purple reds, and those were the colors that were popular in that part of the world. If you think of the tapestries that were hung on the walls in medieval castles and so forth, the colors that were used were often dark shades of red or blue or purple or whatever, and any roses that had those same colors were as popular as well. So it sort of fit in with the taste or the color taste of the folks who lived at that point in time.
Great. That kind of is a great segue into the different types and classes of OGRs that bloom once a season. And I know you mentioned that one of the greatest things about the old garden rose is that they bloom very early in the spring. So can you talk about the types that bloom once a season and repeat blooming, the different varieties?
Sure. Well, it's almost universal that if you grow a species rose, it will be a once blooming rose. And many of them will have just 5 petals. But they are early bloomers, so it's a trade-off. Although they only bloom once, you have roses growing in your garden many weeks before hybrid teas will begin to bloom. So that's one of the reasons why I grow some species in my garden, because I know I'll have roses in bloom long before my hybrid teas or floribundas begin to flower. Other roses that are once blooming are hybrid gallicas. And again, the hybrid gallicas and some species gallicas were very popular in Europe, in France, for example, in Germany, way back into the 1500s and 1600s. But again, people were satisfied with the fact that they only bloomed once. But again, they were early bloomers, and so that, again, was a trade-off. And then in the 1800s, the class of roses called hybrid perpetuals, that class was developed. And it's been estimated that in the 1800s, there were about 4,000 different varieties of hybrid perpetuals, which were very popular because they would bloom more than once. And they weren't in bloom perpetually, but they bloomed heavily in the spring, and then there would be scattered bloom for the rest of the summer. And so that sort of set the tone for what hybridizers were looking for, and that is old garden roses that they could hybridize, which would bloom more than once. And now we have several of those that fit that category. The Portlands, for example, would fit in that category, and certainly the hybrid rugosas would fit into that category. And as far as minimal care, probably the hybrid rugosas are one of the original sort of easy care roses to grow. They don't require winter protection here in my hardiness zone 5A. They are resistant to a lot of fungal diseases, especially black spot. And they bloom more than once, so they're just about all that a senior rose grower would want in terms of growing old garden roses.
And I know that you were kind enough to put together a list for cold hardy roses. And can you tell us a couple of your favorites that are great for, I know you're in zone 5A, right?
Mm-hmm.
Central Illinois, and of course, for the listening audience, you can, when you go to purchase, I know that there's a few places that you can put in your zone when you're buying your rose, and they'll tell you what rose is best for your area. But for like zone 5A, Central Illinois, what are the best, some of your favorite roses?
Okay, well, one of my favorites, because of its repeat blooming, because of its fragrance, and the fact that it's hardy, is Rose Durest, R-O-S-E-D-E-R-E-S-C-H-T. It's a Portland rose. Probably has been in existence, since about 1880. It's winter hardy, as I've indicated. It will get black spot, but it basically isn't terribly affected by the disease. It certainly doesn't become weakened because of it. I do spray it along with the spray that I have left over from my hybrid teas, but it is an excellent rose. It grows about 3 or 4 feet tall, and if it should grow taller than that, you can prune it back and shape it and do whatever you want to it, and it will tolerate all kinds of pruning, and it's just an amazing rose to grow. If you want something taller, there is, as someone mentioned it earlier in the program, Madam Hardy, which is a tall white damask rose, tremendous fragrance, but it is tall, so you need to give it plenty of space, but it is a once bloomer. Mm-hmm. So again, it's a trade-off between having a nice flush of bloom in the spring early, but then that's all that you'll get, but then it's well worth to have. Another one that I like is a hybrid rugosa called Therese Bunae, which again blooms several times in the summer. And since it's a hybrid rugosa, is going to require just minimum maintenance. So those are three that I would say would be my starter roses. There's a classic shrub, which I grow, which I sort of put into the same category as old garden roses, because their shape and the growth patterns of classic shrubs are very similar to old garden roses, and that's one called Nevada. It's a white rose whose bloom is about 4 or 5 inches wide, five-petaled, a pure white with beautiful yellow stamens in the center. But it's a tall bush, and again, so you need to give it a lot of room. So those 4 or 5 bushes are certainly what I would call my 4 favorites and my starter collection, as it were, if I were only going to grow 4 or 5 bushes.
Tony, isn't that Nevada, is the one called Nevada, is that the one that looks like a butterfly almost?
It looks like a huge butterfly on a bush when the bush is covered. It's just amazing.
Well, I know my husband attended your presentation, and he immediately said, can't we put a whole row of Nevada behind our little red barn? I mean, he was completely smitten with that bush. And I really like Rose de Roche. Isn't that also a deep fuchsia? Like a
yes, it
deep
is.
Pink? Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I'm sorry, Chris, did you start to say something?
Well, Tony, we have a question via email. A lady emailed us this morning and asked if you knew about the apothecary rose, if you could speak to that particular
variety. Apothecary rose?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, the apothecary rose, or the name that the American Rose Society calls it, is Rosa Gallica officinalis. But it's been known as the apothecary rose for many years, and it was known to be grown prior to 1600. So it's a rose that's been around for a long time. It is a species Gallica. And it has a wonderful fragrance and is probably a parent of many roses during the centuries of rose breeding. It blooms just once a year. And it's one of my, I would say, middle in my part of the world, one of not my earliest bloomers, but sort of the mid-spring or early summer bloomers. And a lot of old garden roses and historical gardens will have a apothecary rose as part of its collection.
Mm, very nice.
I don't know if that answers the question, but it's one I grow and I like it, and again, but it's a once bloomer.
We had another question as well about the Noisette variety of roses. Are those considered old garden roses as well?
The Noisettes are old garden roses and happen to be a class of roses that actually were originated in North America or in the United States. I only grow one because they're tender in my hardiness zone. Most Noisettes do very well in the deep south. I have one called Nastarana, Nastarana, which I would recommend if you live in my part of the world or in my hardiness zone, because it will survive the winters and it blooms all summer long. And again, it has collections of five-petaled white rose blooms, and it's just beautiful. And the other Noisettes I more or less steered away from, because they will need a lot of winter protection, and I've sort of shied away from trying to find space for those. But yes, they are old garden roses.
Yeah. So how many roses are you growing currently in your garden?
I'm more or less at my saturation point now, about 150.
Yeah.
I used to have about 200. But as I age and my garden ages, my ability to dig holes in the plant roses has somewhat diminished, and so my holdings have diminished as well.
Yeah,
and Tony, you talked a little bit about it, but the only thing I thought we really didn't highlight is that fragrance of the old garden roses. It's even though roses are known for fragrance, the old garden roses, one of the best things about them are their fragrance. So I think we need to. Can you touch on that a little bit?
Yeah, and again, the fragrance of the old garden roses are a natural fragrance. It's something they've had as a result of being species roses or being part of the breeding program of early hybridizers, which appreciated fragrance. Modern hybridizers are now more interested, I think, in obtaining roses that have the hybrid T-shape, or in painting particular colors, and the hereditary units, the genes that have controlled fragrance have probably been sort of bred out of these new hybrids, and so many modern roses do not have a great deal of fragrance anymore. But for the old garden roses, you can pretty much count on them being very fragrant. And David Austin, in developing his line of roses, has tried to revive that appreciation of fragrance as he's developed his roses that not only look like old garden roses, but have now recaptured the fragrance of old garden roses.
Well, Tony, it's just been wonderful. I just, your presentation that I attended was wonderful. And if our listening audience wants to know more, with your permission, I wrote up a lot of what you talked about, and they can visit www.gagasgarden.com. And I wrote a lot of the things that you shared. And it's called Old Garden Roses, Sweet Memories. It was a week ago, so you can read more of what Tony had to say in his presentation. And we want to thank you so much for sharing all of your knowledge with us, and we hope you'll come back and talk about Old Garden Roses. I know both Chris and Teresa are also willing to talk about Old Garden Roses, and I'm putting in more and more. I'm going to put in a whole stand of Nevada. I know that. So thank you again, and we'll be talking with you more. So we'll see you next time, Tony. Chris.
Okay, thank you.
Uh-huh, thank you.
Bye-bye.
Yeah. Don't go anywhere. We'll be back with this week's Rose Show Roundup. So stay with us. There's more Rose Chat Radio coming your way.
Hi, this is Jackie D'Elia with Southern Post Journal, and today I want to talk to you about manure compost tea. This is Authentic Haven brand from California. One of the things that I really like about this is how easy it is to apply. It's a simple cotton bag filled with composted manure. You drop it in your bucket, typically a 1 to 5 gallon bucket of water. Drop in your tea bag. You'll notice some of the brown liquids coming out, and that's the manure starting to mix with the water. Once that's finished, 1 to 3 days, you'll have some fantastic manure tea ready for putting on your plants. So I've got my manure tea brewing for about 3 days, and I'm going to take a peek in there and see what it looks like. It's got a great color, it's got a great smell, and it's ready to be applied to my garden. So whether you choose to put it in your watering can and a sprayer, or just take a bucket and drench it into your vegetable garden, it's very easy to use. I use it in my garden, and I highly recommend it. So give it a try.
Show Roundup, and may I say that if you've never been to a rose show, find a show near you and go. You'll see the most beautiful roses, and you get to meet the dedicated and very knowledgeable rose growers. And it's especially good in your area because you get to know what goes that does very well in your region. So here are a few of the rose shows that are happening next weekend. On May 4th, the Wire Glass Rose Society in Dothan, Alabama is having their show, as well as the Pacific Southwest District Rose Society in Carlsbad, California. On May 5th, we have 3 shows, the East Bay Rose Society in Oakland, California, the Peninsula Rose Society in Redwood City, California, and the Santa Clara County Rose Society in San Jose. You can check out a full listing of rose shows at roseshow.com. And I want to thank our listeners for joining us today on Rose Chat on Blog Talk Radio. And we'd love to hear from you. Send your comments and your feedback on today's show to our email address at grow@rosechat.info. And as Chris mentioned earlier, you can find us all on Twitter by following the Rose Chat hashtag, and you can like us on Facebook. And we have a website, rosechatradio.com, and there you'll find links to all of our previous broadcasts. And if you're not a member of the American Rose Society, we believe that joining that society is a decision you will not regret. So check them out online at ars.org.
Underwriting support for Rose Chat Radio is provided by the Haven Brand Soil Conditioners, providing generations of gardeners with the truly all-natural alternatives to chemical fertilizers with their line of composted manure teas and alfalfa teas for roses. Find them online at manuretea.com.
Well, until next time, happy gardening from your friends at Rose Chat.